All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 38 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We are continuing with the story of archaic Athens. So when you hear these two words put together, what you have to understand is that we are talking about the story of Athens, which is this wonderful, unique. Yesterday we used the word indispensable. What a great word. This irreplaceable would be another great word. This wonderful, irreplaceable civilization in history, a classical civilization. However, we are studying still the part before it becomes so wonderful. We're studying the part of Athenian history before the Athenians reach that stage where they are able to understand things in a new way, in a way that is so interesting and so worthwhile that people later on are going to look back on what they achieved and seek to copy it. And indeed, to this day, we do that. It is now embedded in the way of life that you will live. It is expected of you. It is a part of the world that you will live in. That you are expected to participate in what is called a democracy. And you, as an individual, will grow up in this society and you will see your parents and how they act. And this society, and when there are elections and how they choose to act and so on. And you hopefully will continue to study history for many years to come and gain an appreciation for what exactly this is. And hopefully in its better aspects and understand what's good about it, but also what's not so good about it. And also especially understand what a republic is. And look around in the world that you're in and hopefully participate in making it a better place. And so all of this has to do with the fact that we are the students of Athens. We are people who have learned to live in a different way than the people of the archaic world. But even the Athenians at some point in their past were stuck at the archaic level. And for the moment in our story, up until about next week, in our timeline, up until about next week, they're going to be stuck there at this archaic level. And that means mostly they are going to have monarchy. This we are already quite comfortable and familiar with. We've seen monarchy in Egypt. We've seen monarchy also in Mesopotamia. It is the norm in archaic societies. But we saw yesterday that there was something else that, especially in Athens and in other places in Greece and sometimes in other parts of the world as well, replaced monarchy. So that's what I wanted you to focus on yesterday, right? So we were looking at a variety of important things having to do with what was going on in Athens around this time. And we encountered this new term, aristocracy. And aristocracy comes from the Greek word aristos, which means what?
Best.
Patrick says the best. Okay, right. We have the krasi part, which is the rule of, and here we have the aristos, and so they are supposedly the best. Why were they the best? Why could the people who were the aristocrats or the lords or the nobility? We have to be used to using a variety of different words for these characters. But you will often hear the term aristocrat, you will hear the term lord, and you will hear the term nobleman or nobility having to do with the whole group. Why were they supposedly the best? Rosetta, go ahead.
Because they were related to heroes, old heroes of the Athenians.
Okay, right. So they were members of the group called the Eupatrids. They were sons of noble fathers, sons of great heroes of the city-state from its past. But at the same time, to be a member of this aristocracy over time, you couldn't just bank on your ancestors' greatness. You yourself had to be great. So what was the consistent thing that you had to do, in fact, to be the best? What was the practical definition of being the best? What was the indispensable, to go back to that vocabulary word again, thing that the aristocrats did, at least back in Athens? Right? What did they do for the city that allowed them to say, we are the best? Julia, go ahead.
They protected it.
Okay, protected it how?
By fighting.
Yeah, right. By being warriors, right? By defending the city as the leaders of its army, right? Okay. So yesterday we got to this point where, well, something interesting was starting to happen in ancient Greece. Not just in Athens. Athens was not the first place to experience this change. It was really elsewhere in Greece, in particular Sparta, that we are going to be talking about in the coming weeks as well, and elsewhere, and in other parts of the archaic world as well. There was a change going on in the way that wars were fought, and, well, this was where we left off yesterday. What was happening was the great men, the best, the warriors, who were the aristos, were becoming less important in war, because some really clever, really intelligent military thinkers figured out that you don't have to be a single great warrior to get a lot of things done on the battlefield. In fact, it's better if you take all the regular guys and you line them up and make them work together in a really coordinated way. And this is what we call a phalanx. And the Spartans brought this to Greece, and other Greek cities started to having to use the phalanx, where every soldier worked together with every other soldier, their shields and their spears and their swords, in a really coordinated fashion. And so that meant now that pretty much every soldier was becoming relatively important, certainly compared to before. So the aristocracy now was not as easy to maintain. People didn't necessarily believe in it or like it. And elsewhere in Greece, and then soon enough in Athens, some people started to rebel against the aristos. And this led to a new form of government. We've got, in the archaic world of Greece, we have pretty much three main forms of government. We have the two that we've already encountered. We have monarchy, and we have aristocracy. So we're already familiar with those. But now we're going to see that in the archaic world, when people didn't like these, and they weren't able to think through having a better solution, they pretty much relied on one corrective, one way of making things better. And this has a strange sort of a name, so I'm going to chat it for you guys here so that you can take it down. And we can speak of it in a couple different ways. It'll sound very strange at first, so I'll type the strange name for you guys. The first and strange name is Tyranny. Now, why does that sound so strange? How could that be a corrective to monarchy and aristocracy? Doesn't that sound weird? Who knows what tyranny means? Well, I'll remind you guys that the Founding Fathers said that George III wanted to be a tyrant. So they were accusing him of tyranny. And when the English lords rebelled against King John, it was because of his tyranny. So you guys don't remember the word tyranny from any of those situations, American or European history from before? Normally, when we think of the word tyranny, we mean the unjust rule of a king. We think of the king who, the unjust or oppressive rule of a king. No cursive. The unjust rule of a king. But in Greece, it meant something else. Here, so I'm going to chat this to you guys as well. Tyranny meant the rule of a tyrannos. This is the original Greek word. So who can guess what this might mean? If it doesn't mean what we think it means, because when we hear the word tyranny, we think, okay, a really bad king. We think an oppressive and unjust ruler. If it doesn't mean that, what do you think it could mean in this situation? Isn't it funny that we don't use the Greek way? So obviously this idea did not really survive. We now use the word tyrant in a totally different way than the Greeks would have. Rosetta, what do you think?
Maybe it's the rule of a commoner.
All right, good guess. Good guess. Maybe the rule of a commoner. Maybe the rule of somebody who was not a member of the not a monarch, right? Or not a member of the aristocracy. That was a really good guess. Now, it wasn't so specific. But you're on the right track. You're on the right track. And so in other cities, especially in cities that the Dorians had conquered, the common people certainly were not happy to be ruled by these other Greeks. And so they would rebel against them, whether they were monarchs or whether they were aristocrats, didn't matter. They would rebel against them under some sort of leader. You know, when you're having a rebellion, you gotta have somebody who's in charge, somebody who is the leader of the whole thing. And this person was the tyrannos. This person was, in ancient Greece, we could think of him as a popular leader. Okay? A popular leader. Somebody who did not have noble lineage, or who was not a member of the club, of the kings and aristocrats, but nonetheless, everybody wanted to follow him and make him the leader. Why? Well, because the other forms, monarchy and aristocracy, were so unfair. And they refused to live under those forms of government. So they would rebel and they would have instead a tyrannos in charge. But, okay, the tyrannos is a rebel leader. But then, once he becomes the ruler, what is he? You know? Can you tell? What does he become? Once the rebellion is over, and you got rid of the king, or you got rid of the mean aristocrats that you don't like, well, what did they end up with? They ended up with how many people in charge?
A tyranno?
Yeah, well, how many people is that, Patrick? You're not clear what I'm talking about? There's one leader. So how many people end up in charge?
One.
Okay. Please tell me, what is the definition of a government in which one person is in charge? And what's the term for that? Now, this is not a hard question. We know this one. Henry Wyatt...
This is riot monarchy.
Okay. So, in fact, the rule of a tyrannos just ended up being a new kind of monarchy. Now, why would we think of this as a different form of government then? Well, because it was a monarchy that the people had chosen. Right? Instead of just the monarchy of a Eupatrid family, the monarchy of some ruler chosen by the aristocracy. Instead, a tyrannos was a monarch chosen by
a tyrannos?
Sigourney?
The people!
Yes, exactly. A tyrannos was a monarch chosen by the people. This is a very interesting and common result of problems in archaic societies. When things don't work, when people are really dissatisfied and they don't know how to solve the problem, they find somebody to follow and they rally behind that person and they choose him to be in charge. And then he becomes a new kind of monarch. And the Greeks called this type of person a tyrannos. He was a new kind of leader, not a traditional monarch, but a popular monarch, a ruler chosen by the people. Now, this is not democracy, because once he's the ruler, he's the ruler. Now, it's a pretty tricky situation, and it's not necessarily very stable. The rule of a tyrannos in ancient Greece did not tend to work out very well. It happened regularly in different cities when people were dissatisfied with their ruler. They would choose a tyrannos. I wonder, this is a really big question, but just to suggest to those of you who might be able to think about this. There have been rulers, there have been tyrannos, or the plural for tyrannos is tyrannoi. So that would be the plural. Okay, let me just type that there. There have been tyrannoi in other societies over time. Can anybody think of basically somebody who was a tyrannos in European history or any other time in history? This is a big stretch, I know, but I just wanted to encourage anybody that might be able to think of it in this way, in a Greek sort of way. I'll give you an example of somebody who was basically a tyrannos. Napoleon. Anybody? Some of you may have studied European history before. And so if you go and you think about what happened in French history, Napoleon was very much a tyrannos. And then Napoleon, his cousin, his nephew, actually, Napoleon III, was also pretty much a tyrannos. And so these were people that were chosen by the people to be their monarchs. Strange outcome. And instead of having freedom, they chose a new kind of monarchy. And it was, well, it was still a monarchy, though. It was still the rule of a tyrannos. And the Greeks would frequently do this. And this happened in Athens as well. This happened in Athens as well, more than once. And in particular, one that I want to focus on has to do with a tyrannos named, well, somebody who wanted to be a tyrannos. He actually didn't succeed. His name was Cylon, which is quite a strange name. So, so Cylon was an aristocrat. So as it turns out, a tyrannos could be pretty much anybody from the society. Okay, he didn't have to be a commoner, but he had to be somebody who was popular. And Cylon was popular. He was an Olympic champion. Now remember, the Olympics were what made the Greeks the Greeks, right? They were the festival that the Greek people had all in common. And Olympic champions were pretty much the most famous people in any Greek city. I mean, think about how life is today and who are the so-called celebrities and who's famous and who does everybody pay attention to. About the closest thing that you had back then to anything like that would be Olympic champions. They were the great celebrities of every city. And Cylon was an Olympic champion, and he wanted to become the ruler of Athens. Why couldn't he be elected by the rest of the Eupatrids or whatever? Nobody knows. This is not a story that we have all the details for. But Cylon decided that he wanted to take his fame and make himself a tyrannos. So he took his soldiers, all of his supporters and his family, and he put together a small private army and took over this part of the city. Now, this is Athens, by the way. And does anybody recognize this? I mean, this is the ancient center of Athens. This is the ancient center of Athens. Does anybody know what this place is called? Rosetta?
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I forgot the name.
Yeah, it's a tricky name. In fact, I'll show it to you on Wikipedia. It's called the Acropolis. And here's what it looks like today, from far away. And see what it is. It's an area, and this is modern day Athens, really big, sprawling city, modern city, right? But you can see it's a plateau. Huh, that's kind of a good one, right? We were talking about the archaic plateau. This is a plateau. It's an area that's raised up from everything else, and all the most important religious temples were located there. This is the leftovers, because unfortunately there's a lot of damage was done to it. But an artist made a painting of what it perhaps looked like in its greatest period. Here's a statue to Athena, the goddess of the city, and all the various temples and government buildings and stuff would are all surrounding this particular part of the city, the most important part of the city. So Cylon took his army into his own little private army into the center of the city to take over all the most important religious temples and to basically announce to the people that he wanted to be the tyrannos. Now, this is a very strange thing compared to, again, our modern society and modern democracy. This was a very archaic kind of action, right, by a person who's kind of famous, who's well known, who a lot of people admire him and respect him, and he decides he wants to be the monarch. How do you do it? How do you do it? And nowadays, I mean, this is not even a thought that would occur to any of us. But back then, for somebody like that, there was a way that you could kind of announce your intention to be the king and kind of put it before the people and see whether or not they would accept you. And so what he did was he took his army up and took over this part of the city and basically said, I am going to be your Tyrannos. And the people had to figure out what to do. This was their most important place, their most important place. So think of it like, I mean, it's hard for us to understand what ancient Greece was like and ancient societies were like, but these were the most important religious temples of the city. And this was the most important location in the center of the city. And so for him to take his own clan and his own supporters and basically make a private army and go take over this spot was kind of the way that you would announce that you wanted to be the ruler. Well, as it turns out, he failed, though, because the people would not accept him, and they formed an army, and there was, he was forced to give up, and he was executed. And Athens, at this point, did not have a Tyrannos. But the people of Athens saw that other cities had Tyrannoi. And this is the first time, as far as we know, that somebody had attempted to become the Tyrannos of Athens. So, how could you avoid such a thing? How could you perhaps keep order in your society? Well, the Athenians decided on a solution that looks a lot like the Code of Hammurabi. Very fascinating to see that the Athenians, in their archaic times, were not all that different from all the others around them. And they made a code of laws by an archon named Draco. They gave an archon the job of making a new code of laws to help prevent having a Tyrannos. And Draco made a set of laws, and it was extremely harsh. And the whole point of it was just like Hammurabi's laws. Remember, Hammurabi's laws said, well, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Oh, but by the way, if you take out the eye of an aristocrat, you know, what's going to happen? If you're a regular person, are we just going to take out your eye? Patrick?
We're going to kill you?
We're going to kill you. Yeah, exactly, right? The punishment is going to be much more harsh. Exactly, exactly. So, in Draco's laws was the same thing. In Draco's laws, the most common punishment for a crime was death. Most common punishment. So, Draco's laws, let's see here. I'm trying to chat this to you guys because I'm trying to bring the class to a close here, but answering the questions on your self-test. So Draco's laws, the punishment, the most common punishment was death. That doesn't make sense. Okay, and as a result, we do have a word in modern English that comes from Draco's laws and from the problem of maintaining order in archaic Athens. In modern society, we say that if a set of laws or rules are very harsh, okay, they are draconian. Here's the term for a something that is especially harsh or strict. Okay? We say it is draconian. And that is straight from the name Draco. Okay? So nowadays, if something is really harsh, you may hear it described as draconian, a draconian measure, or a draconian law. And that comes from the name Draco, because He wanted to make a set of laws, like Hammurabi, that would discourage anybody from trying to change the government, that would discourage anybody from trying to do anything against the rulers of the city-state. So, this is still where, well, Draco's laws came around 621 BC, just for those, you know, who want a date or who are kind of curious. So Draco's laws came around 621 BC, and so this is still what Athens was like. We know that we're not going to get to democracy until 508 BC. So, but what we will see starting on Monday is that there was some progress in Athens before that. All of this is not particularly, well, I'm not sure what the word is, but kind of positive, right? We're not. It's not very impressive to see the Athenians having monarchy and aristocracy and the rule of a tyrannos and having draconian laws. This is what they did when they couldn't do better. But what we'll see is, starting next week, is that they did start to do better. They did start to do better. And they did start to work their way towards democracy. And we'll talk about the first of the heroes of Athenian society that really made some progress for Athens. And his name was Solon. So, starting Monday, we'll talk about a man named Solon and what he did to make Athens a better place and started to make Athens more like the democracy that it became. Okay, guys, that's it for today. Tomorrow is History Through Art. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.